Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. This is our weekly programming covering arts and arts events in Northwest Indiana, Valparaiso, and all over. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Hey, that theme music you heard was by the wonderful Billy Foster with a vocal by the wonderful Renee Foster.
Mm-hmm. They're so terrific.
They're so sweet. Mm-hmm. We appreciate them doing our theme music. Hey, underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and our landlord right here in the great building we're in, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. I'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic technical building right there on 130. Give Walt a call, 219-462-5821. We'd like to thank them for their generous support. Always a shout-out to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager.
Thank you so much, Greg.
He gets us on the air all the time. By the way, Art on the Air is supported by the Indiana Arts Commission, Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. So I guess we're a really big deal if we're supported by those folks. Hey, if you're interested in being a guest, sending us information about your arts-related event, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. By the way, we do have a Facebook presence out there, Art on the Air WVLP, so like us on Facebook. You can find out more of what's happening each week. I post something up there all the time, and we spread the news about what's coming up on our show. Hey, these programs are streaming, so if you have trouble hearing us on 103.1 FM or over the air on 89.1 FM, you can hear us streaming on WVLP.org or on Lakeshore Public Radio. Both have our show streaming. Art on the Air is rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. Our show archive can be heard at Breck.com/AOTA. That's Breck, BREC.com/AOTA. And you can also see our detailed arts events calendar there too. And we also added something else, and I'll get to this in a moment, but we have now a support page. So if you're interested in supporting Art on the Air and, of course, WVLP, I have an entire packet. So we'd love to have you do that. Hey, we're also going to be heard on Lakeshore Public Radio every Sunday at 7 p.m. That's 89.1 FM. And streaming there, and of course at WIUN Red Hawk Radio at IU Northwest. So, hey, talking about support, you know, this station is like a community and a public radio station, and we depend on listener and underwriter support, like we have Paragon Investments and Brower Museum. We'd love to have you part of Art on the Air to support us. We are doing some major improvements here that will go right to the station. We're getting a new board for our studio here. We're hoping to get phone-in capability pretty soon, so we're looking to expand, but we can only do that with your support. You can find out more about doing that directly at wvlp.org/support, or if you go to our page, hit the support button, and you'll find out how to support specifically Art on the Air, but the money will come to WVLP. We have a lot of different levels. We'll mention you on the air several times, and you know what? We have a great focused listener audience. I know from our Facebook page we have about 1,000 engagements every month, so I assume we have about that many listeners, at least more, and you have at least 3 bites over the air on the apple. So if you find out information, wvlp.org/support. I don't want you to just be a listener, become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you can. And I always say this every week, just so you all remember, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting WVLP and Art on the Air today. Well, let's move on to the arts calendar. Porter County, well, Valparaiso, Brower Museum is back in business again, and they've already had their opening for these shows. They have Brown County and Beyond by Curry Baum. Then we have Spectral Speculations, Japanese Prints by Ruth Rage Collection. Mary Broke is Unfinished and Prints by Lutero Capelli. These are all at the Brower Museum, and you can see that. And they'll have information about that. Valerie at the gallery, the Village Gallery at the Pines, they have Jackson Pearson, and he's going to have his exhibit. It opened January 12th through February. It's Remembering a Man and His Eye for the Beauty. You can see that in Valparaiso at the Village Gallery. Chesterton Arts Center. Well, every week they have so much, so I would always suggest go to our arts events page, click on their link. Through the rest of January, we have the Duneland Photography Club member exhibit. They do that. We have stained glass classes, Heaven Return. returning, a whole range of kids' classes with two great teachers. Find information at the chesternart.com site. Art Barn. Well, they're January 24th, Friday. Tim Rounds returns for an open night of extraordinary fun there at the Art Barn. You can find out details on their either Facebook page or web. Artsy Fine Arts, they have a whole bunch of fine new classes coming up. Their pour class is very popular, their acrylic class. So you can see that. That's a new place in Chesterton, been open a little over a year. We've had them on the show. The Ellen Firm Gallery, well, they continue with the Chase with the Iron Horse, a 40 by 50 oil painting. And it's started in December. We'll be exhibiting through this month. And then Kellen Firm himself is having an exhibit at the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago. That's opening Sunday, January 26th, and it'll be running for a while. And you can find out information there. And it's going all the way through May. So congratulations to Kevin.
Yay, Kevin. Way His work go. Is so phenomenal.
It'll be an awesome.
I wonder which body of work it is.
I don't know. He didn't say in the release, but he did send it to Art on the Air.
I know. I noticed.
So if you want to get your stuff on our art calendar,
thanks,
send
Kevin.
It to us. The Depot Museum and Art Gallery. Well, guess what's returning? The third annual 5x5 fundraising exhibit, where they take either framed pieces from photographers and things, or take little 5x5 canvases and everything. And what you do is these artists donate their work for free as a fundraiser for the Depot. I've participated the past 2 years with my things. It's a great thing. Participating artists, you can pick up your either canvas or frame starting March 1st, and it's the Glenn Firm Art Supply there in Beverly Shores. And then you can put your work in there, and then people come on the opening day of there and pledge on that. Memorial Opera House, well, they have already done, they're already coming up with Mega Beatles on January. And then we have, they're getting ready for, in February, Mary Poppins the Musical. So you can find information what's going on at the Memorial Opera House. By the way, the Mega Beatles thing is January 18th, 7:30. Dig the Dunes calendar is still available. Hey, if you look at October, you'll see my picture in there. But it's a great collection of photography from all over Northwest Indiana, especially focused on the dunes. They also have a Moonlight, Sunset, Sand, and Rock, which is January 22nd at Anderson Vineyard and Winery. And that's about 6 to 8 p.m., and you can do work on different types of work there while you enjoy a glass of that wonderful Fruit of the Vine. Chicago Street Theater, well, they're doing The Curious Incident of the Dog at Night that opens on January 24th. So you can see that, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night, running through February. That's Chicago Street Theater in Valparaiso. 4th Street Theater, well, they are getting ready for their production of Art. That's the name of the show. Performance will begin March 13th. It's a three-person show. We had Grant Fitch, who's one of the cast members, on. So you can go see there, support 4th Street Theater in Chesterton. And that's just about all we have in Porter County. What's happening in LaPorte County?
It's kind of light in LaPorte County, I'll say. The Thaddeus C. Gallery is located in downtown LaPorte. Look them up. They're fabulous. Lubesnik Center for the Arts galleries closed January 5th through the 24th. They will be reopening the gallery, or the opening of the new show will be February 7th, and it's in the Heinemann Gallery, and the exhibit is called Local at the LCA. It's art from the Area Artists Association. How many pieces will you have in that?
I have three pieces. Well, they haven't told us that. We're supposed to deliver it on Tuesday, bring five pieces in. I assume that three of the pieces will be selected.
So was it curated by the area artists, or did the Lubesnik Center have
Laura Fosberg does the curating and everything. But we've already sort of pre-curated the show. We submitted the work, and she sort of like sorted that out with us. So I have a feeling three pieces. I know what three. I'm bringing five, but I know the three pieces I want to put in the show. So
excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Rising Phoenix Gallery is closed until March 1st. SFC Gallery has no exhibit this month, but they're still open for business with their framing.
And they do have a thing coming up pretty soon. Is the in February? I know it's a little
artist
ways off.
Artist appreciation
yeah. Coming up. So be kind of heads up there, artists. I think that's on the 13th, Friday the 13th.
Blink Contemporary Art is exhibiting the work by Suzanne Cohen Lang and Rick Lang, and I believe right now they're on winter hiatus. Nest is exhibiting the work of Robert Serco, Me, Myself, and Eyes, his recent paintings and drawings. The Comic Drawing Club is starting up again, first meeting January 17th, and ongoing on Fridays from 3 to 5 p.m. or 6 p.m., depending on how we're doing. Saturday, January 18th, and every third Saturday, all ages, all talents, the Every Kind of Talent Show with Captain Ambivalent. It begins at 7 p.m. And it is open mic meets vaudeville meets show and tells. So we're looking forward to that. Can't wait to see the captain. First Friday monthly drum circle with Don Wenig begins at 6:30 p.m. February 7th is the next one. Every third Wednesday is the brain injury support group. And on Sunday, we have something special and has to do with our guests here. Sunday, January 19th, we have Free Your Story. It's a storytelling workshop with Roger Batten, who is our guest. So I won't go into my whole long thing about it because we have him here. January 25th, Stairways to Storytelling Workshop at the Mishawaka Public Library from 10:30 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And that goes into the first layer, which we'll talk about with Roger. So I have a little addendum here.
All right.
Okay. So Need a Lawyer, the Indiana State Bar Association and Northwest Indiana Volunteer Lawyers Incorporated, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., presents its Talk to a Lawyer Free Day on Monday, January 20th, 2020. On that day, volunteer lawyers will be available to answer your legal questions in a brief 10 to 15 minute consultation in the following locations: from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. at the Portage Township Trustee Office at 3484 Airport Road in Portage, from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. at the Valparaiso Public Library, 103 East Jefferson in Valparaiso, from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. at the Hebron Public Library at 201 West Sigler Street. If you can't make it to a local site, you can speak to Indianapolis attorneys on January 20th only by calling 1-800-226-2581 in English only. That's 1-800-226-2581.
If you send me that, I'll put it on our events page also.
I will do that.
There we go.
I'm not sure if they... I tried to look up whether Michigan City is having it this year. They usually always do, so...
So if you need help, lawyer up.
I know.
Just as a side note, my wife watches a lot of procedural dramas, and one thing when they're interviewing, and it seems like whenever they want to lawyer up, it's like because they're guilty. And I'm like, no, wait a minute. Sometimes you want to have a lawyer there just to make sure you're procedurally correct. So it's like, well, if you lawyer up, that's it. So anyway, going on to Lake County. Studio 659, Artistic License. Their jury show, it's a salon show called Artistic License, opens Friday, January 31st, 7 to 9 p.m., open to the public. Runs through February. Yes, I do have three pieces in that show. So I'll be that's in Whiting.
The lucky three.
Well, that's usually what most of them take and everything. South Shore Arts. Well, first of all, if you're interested in grants, the grant period is running out. The deadline's coming up at the end of this month. If you have questions, call the wonderful Donna Catalano at South Shore Arts. So I have her number and email on our events page, and she can talk you through the process.
And she is very knowledgeable and helpful.
She is. She is really, and I credit her with this, has really, Region 1, which is our three-county area, has really, our profile in the state has really grown as a result of her work. I mean, she's now, I think, heading the state council thing.
Well, puts in the time. She really does.
She really wants to empower artist groups. And the thing about the grant money coming from the IAC is they really want to give you the money. They don't want to just throw it away, but they really want to know if you have a legitimate art project or anything, they want to give it to you. Moving on to South Shore Arts, Bachman Gallery, they still have things that go bump in the night, and it's running out pretty soon. February 2nd is when that exhibit closes. It's a great little exhibit. In the Atrium Gallery, they have Earth Forms running through March 8th. Crown Point Branch is The Winter in the Indiana Dunes by Jane Lohmeyer. Bridget Covart, Mary Kay Whitlock, and then several others are doing that. Substation number 9 in Hammond, they have The Gallery of the Voice, Julio Guerrera, and Toll Theater has Jim Sergey, A Surrealistic Thing. Miller Beach Arts and Creative District, Black History Month, they're having their opening reception February 7th. For an artist display there. You can find out all the details of the artists there, but they'll be doing a celebration for the entire month of February into just the beginning of March. South Lake Artist Cooperative, SLAC. Well, they have a call for a new exhibit called Wanderlust at February 15th. They'll be at the Wild Rose Brewery. Again, links on our site. Their other exhibits, Coffee, continues at the Sip Coffee House in Crown Point, and Crackle, their other exhibits, at the Sip Coffee House number 2 in Highland, and also at the Paul Henry Gallery Gallery. Their 10th anniversary invitational show is still going on there. January 18th, Rick Theriault, one of the great people that does strange art, will be doing an artist talk at 4 to 5:30 at the Paul Henry Gallery. By the way, if you've never...
Strange art?
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, like, I don't know how to describe it exactly. If you saw it, you know what I mean. It's very... very bizarre. It's like, where have you been? It's kind of like a Dorothy Graydon on steroids, I guess. It's definitely interesting. I mean, it's fabulous work. It's very like, oh my gosh, otherworldly, I guess would be a good term for it. Anyway, that's at the Paul Henry Gallery. He'll be doing that. Also on Thursday, every Thursday is the acoustic jam at the Paul Henry Gallery. Admission is free if you bring food. So otherwise, it's a very low cover charge. Dire Art Visionaries, called Dave. Their show Space Energy Time is continuing at the Wild Rose Brewery in Griffith that started in November and will be replaced once they have the new Wanderlust. Theater at the Center. Well, they will be doing a tribute to Buddy Holly on January 18th, two shows, 3 and 7 p.m. On January 24th, will be in Echoes of Pompeii at 7:30. It's a Pink Floyd tribute. And then Almost Heaven, they're getting in production for their regular Theater at the Center season. It's a tribute to John Denver, adapted by Paul Glaser. You can find out information there. And finally, their Theater for Young Audiences on January 27th through February 1st, they will be doing a special MLK project show. So you can see that, find out information at the Theater for Young Audiences. That's all at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts in Munster, my old stomping grounds from many years ago. Promise You Art House, it got a call for out for nostalgia. They're taking down their current show. It's almost too complicated, but they maybe do it different themes, like based on like time periods and things. Found information on the web link. Lakeshore Community Concerts, who will be here next week to talk about the second half of their season. But coming up is Jason Lyle Black. He's a comic pianist. It'll be Sunday, February 2nd, and you can see information on that. He's kind of he does comedy while he does piano playing, and so that's what their next concert is. Northwest Indiana Symphony, March 6th, which is a little ways off. They have their Vivaldi, Rachmaninoff, Beethoven concert with Jana Resnick on the Beethoven one. We've had her at my theater before, and that's about all we have going on in Lake County. Hey, where's your event? Well, you can send it to us at artontheair@gmail.com. That's artontheair@gmail.com. We'll be happy to read it. We have it on our arts events calendar, and it'd be a great way for you to get your information out there, the way to go. And also, if you want to come on the show, talk about it. We'll be glad to have you on. We do book about a month ahead of time, so if you want to get on, you got to get to it. Well, we're getting to our guest, a longtime friend. He's been on our show before, but we split his time with Meg DeMarcus when he was on. But now we're going to give him the full show. Roger Batten, he's the founder of My Path Bibliotherapy. It's a self-healing practice based on insight research in the university, using storytelling, basically. And he has different tiers, which he'll go into much more explanation about. And we'll talk about that. And, of course, we'll talk about more when he's coming up to your place at the desk there. So welcome to the show, Roger.
Thank you. Well, glad to be here.
Tell us a little, first of all, just I know our listeners maybe didn't catch you the other time you were on. Tell us a little bit about your path, how you got from where you started, where you grew up, where you went to school, and how you got from where you were to where you are.
Yeah, I started out in Niles, Michigan, and I am the son of people who came to Michigan as migrant workers in the late 30s. Big flood on the Mississippi. And they came from Tennessee. There was no crop, so the men and the boys rode the freight trains to Michigan. And after the war, my father settled in Niles, Michigan, and he became a machinist. And I was born and raised in Niles. One of the things that I had from those early years was it was before television. And we kept visiting the migrant camps, and in the migrant camps, they had families who made temporary communities, and I remember sitting around the campfires and listening to the stories. And that was a very early childhood experience of mine. Later on in life, I went to college at Western Michigan University, got a writing degree, and then worked in management for a long time. A transformational moment was when I studied with Dr. Edwards Deming at Dearborn, Michigan, and learned the Deming Way, which was a humanistic work philosophy that I studied and then later wrote a book called The Natural Progression of Improvement, and that became a consulting company where I called Oak Tree Incorporated, and trained tens of thousands of American workers all over the country in team skills and total quality management. That evolved into family transition consulting. So companies that were going through generational succession. And I used storytelling as a method to understand where the founder started, and then visioning to get to where the successors wanted to take the company. And I stopped doing that in 2014. And 2013, I started with storytelling. And I created a workshop and promoted it as Indigan Storyteller. And that went on for some period of time. In 16, Indigan Storyteller was focused on the performance art of storytelling, sort of like the Moth radio show and the Moth competitions in Chicago. And as I went through that, I started to realize that storytelling had a healing power. And I transitioned and I diminished Indigan and created my path, and I've written a philosophy of storytelling called The Layers of Story, and that is now a non-for-profit 501c3 called My Path Bibliotherapy. And you can find us at www.mypath.center if you want more information about My Path. And so a big difference about My Path than other storytelling philosophies, we don't focus on the audience. We focus on the storyteller. So when you come to a My Path show, what you're seeing there is the result, a person that has worked through a story in their life where they've had some perhaps adverse childhood experience or other experience in life. And it isn't all about adverse. It's also people tell stories about the positive things that have occurred to them in life. And so it's different from other storytelling shows and philosophies. So it's based on the layers.
Well, what I've experienced with the layers is that it really, you get to the deep place very easily, and I don't know, the layers just make it easy to get to that place.
We'll talk about the layers and everything. And by the way, the links that you gave are available right on our Facebook page.
I want to still know about early times.
Yes,
so
let's go
like
back.
After the migrant experiences, sitting around the campfire listening to the stories, when you went to school then, were you writing then? Did you write these stories down, or have you written them down?
Well,
I know
yes,
some
I
of them. I know some of them, but
and
I mean,
course,
did you write since like grade school, I guess is what I'm getting at. You know, did you?
No, really, the first part from childhood, I'm an avarice reader. I read all the time. And the first part of my life, you know, my beginnings were pretty humble. And, you know, like in 1958, my dad was laid off, and the main meal in the house that year was either oatmeal or pancakes. And so the first part of my career, my early life, was about trying to get my material life together. But when I really started writing was when I attended college.
Mm.
And from then on, I have, written, and that was a long time ago, so... You know, many years of writing, and the aspect of storytelling is a family characteristic. I have 63 first cousins, and when we have family gatherings, it was literally dozens and dozens of people.
Wow.
Yeah, it was huge, and so part of the thing was with the family, it was always settled into storytelling, and there were plenty of stories to be had.
So is that when you were in college then? Were those the first stories you, were they family related, your first stories, or were they fiction?
They were personal, more personal.
So they started out personal.
What I was experiencing, mm-hmm. right. And I graduated from college in 1976. And I started also at that time writing about my experiences with the military. I was actually in the military for 6 years as a National Guardsman. And I, when I came out of training, it was April 25th, 1970, and May 2nd, 1970 was Kent State. And I moved to Virginia, and one of the things we found out at that time was we were on standby to go for riot control in Washington, D.C. And, of course, the students were killed at Kent State.
Right.
And the captain pulled our platoon together and told us that if we were called into Washington, that if he gave the order to shoot, he wanted us to shoot to kill. And so I rejected that. And I was in Harrisonburg, Virginia. They had the Eastern Mennonite College there. The professors there offered classes on how to become a conscientious objector. So I did. I became a conscientious objector while I served in the National Guard. And then I moved back to Michigan. And while I was in the National Guard, I became a student demonstrator against the Vietnam War. And so a lot of my early writing was about that experience, and it was laid over that foundation of my early childhood experience in the migrant camps. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my writing at that time was directed towards those affairs in my life. Later on, that, you know, my father was a World War II veteran, and he was suffered dramatically from post-traumatic stress disorder. People ask me, they said, why do you have post-traumatic stress? Why do you want to do bibliotherapy? And my father screamed at night all through my childhood. He had horrible night terrors, and the person that he screamed for was always me. I was the oldest son of a family of six. And so he lived his life, and he developed Parkinson's disease. And just before he died, there was a family moved in next door, and it was the wife was Japanese. And he had a really hard time with that. And it wasn't anger. I don't want anyone to get the wrong impression. He wasn't an angry man. He was a wounded man. And just before he died, in March of 1996, the holiday before that, at the end of the year, because he made friends with the couple's two little girls, he loved children, he made friends with them, he was able to sit at a table with Sasko, the neighbor, and find peace. And I tell that story. It's called Beifel. His name was Beifel. Beifel's Redemption. And so he never had any resources to go to help him. And as a child of someone who suffered dramatically, and their life was, you know, very much altered by post-traumatic stress from the war, one of my goals with my path is to provide an avenue for people, especially people who have suffered from mass trauma, like school shootings. Mm-hmm. So one of my visions is that if we have resources and they can use the healing power of a story, those children will not suffer. You know, hearing their parents scream at night, perhaps like my father did. So it's all interwoven into my life story.
That's amazing. I know what was funny is, and this is just a side story, my father, who was in the Philippines but then went to the occupation in Japan in World War II, and he was in the Army Air Corps. Of course, my mother always thought they would be very hateful because they were the ones that dropped the atom bomb. But he actually went to Japanese people's houses, and they were so kind. And it was such a reversal of what you would think. You know, after you go through this war of hate, they were like very accepting of these. And it was, he always, you know, my mom, you're going to get killed. They're going to poison you. And they weren't like that at all. They were like very, very like, come here. Now we'll feed you and everything. So.
Yeah, and it was also laced up with a comment about Dr. Deming. Dr. Deming, the highest award in Japan right now is the Deming Award. He was the General Electric statistician who went to Japan after the war and helped them with modern methods of improvement,
right,
including statistical process control, which then generated the genesis of Toyota and Nissan. And to this day, Toyota dominates automobile manufacturing worldwide.
Exactly. You're listening to Roger Batten on Art on the Air. We'll continue more with about my path and bibliotherapy, the practice that he has, and we're going to explore it a little more in depth here. So, and you'll have a chance to, on January 19th at the Nest to hear. There's a Sunday from 10 to 4, so you'll get a chance in there. I think you're working on the fourth level there.
We are, and so. the experiences. I mean, when Roger puts on there, it's transforming. It truly, truly is. I mean, I've experienced three of them now, and it's just unforgettable. It's an amazing process.
So the Nest is in Michigan City, so if you have a chance, get out there on January 19th. And those of you maybe further out in Mishawaka Public Library on Saturday, January 25th, 10:30 to 4:30 Eastern Time. So get out there, and you can experience Roger and everything, and we got more to explore here. So...
So you first started calling them the five layers of light,
right,
though.
That's what I started with.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was, that goes back to the romantic poets and my philosophy about why do people do art. I learned from the English romantic poets, which is that the role of the artist, why do humans do art? What does it mean? And so my interpretation of that is, everything that humans know and everything that humans believe, everything we know and everything we believe is like a globe of light in the vast darkness of the universe. And there's a space between the edge of what humans know and what we believe, and on the other side of that edge is the vast unknown, huge. And artists are driven to force their consciousness into that tiny space and thrust their agency and their entity and their intention into that space. And when they experience that, then they turn around and with whatever medium that they have, be it fine art, plays, music, anything that they, any media form style that they have, then they translate that for the rest of humanity to understand. So a big part of what I believe is that every time someone looks into the origins of their story and they go on stage and they tell that story, they're expanding the light in the universe. And so they're light bringers and they expand the light. And the other thing I would comment about that is I believe that the most accessible form of art is performance art and it's storytelling. Malcolm Gladwell famously said, there's 10,000 hours to mastery. And if you believe that, then you could do 5 years at 40 hours a week and learn to play the guitar and master it. Well, most of us don't have time to do that, especially adults. However, all of us tell stories. We sat here before the show,
sure,
and started telling each other stories. And if you go to the coffee shop, they're telling each other stories. And if you meet someone, you're telling each other stories. My contention is all of us have logged thousands and thousands of hours of storytelling. So if that logic prevails, then coming to a workshop and learning the mechanics of storytelling, it's not that so far out of reach for people.
Right.
And they go then, and that's exactly what we're going to do this Sunday at the workshop. The title of the workshop this Sunday for the fourth level is Free Your Story. Free Your Story. And that's when you let that story out of you. Now, if it had a an origin in a adverse childhood experience or some other experience you had in your life, it's not just in your mind and your memory, it's in your body too. We carry those wounds and stress in our bodies.
Literally, yeah, literally in our DNA.
Yeah, yeah, it's right there in us. And by going through the process in a very safe and through a trauma-informed facilitation, and then they go on stage, that's when they free that story and release it from their body.
You know, now here I'm curious.
I've watched it happen.
Well, yeah, you've seen it. Let's say let's take it from the first level. Let's say, you know, you're going to do the level four, but like, take us through a process. What, when I go to one of your workshops, let's say, what am I going to experience? What's going to happen when I show up there, you know, and do that? And again, I'm going to start, maybe we'll start kind of a sample with the first level, second level, kind of take us through the levels, but like, let's do that. So I'll come into Roger's workshop, Roger Batten, and he's going to lay that out. So what's the first step?
Yeah, well, there's the mechanics of the workshop, and I would also like to mention that one of the board of directors and co-facilitators is Stacy Garcelone, who's the director of Anim Cara, which is a horse therapy center in LaPorte County. She's a certified therapist. So she'll be co-facilitating with me, and she's a trauma-informed, certified Indiana therapist. So we have people in the room with us that are ready to counsel and cope with any sort of memory that maybe someone has difficulty dealing with.
And we've had Stacy on the show before, so to talk about her process. And you can listen to that show on our archive.
There you go. So the first layer is the roots of your story. And one of the things about that is, where do our stories come from? That's the first layer. Well, when we're born into the world, we're born into the world with our language of the universe. And we don't remember that now. We don't remember our own births, but we were present for that. And we were learning and understanding entities right from the very beginning. And one of the things that to understand is that we all have the same experience in the first years of our life, especially the very first year. We do not have agency. Our stories are given to us. And one of the things I'd like to emphasize about that is that we don't know what other people experienced. We don't know how they came to be the way they are. And judging them or opposing them, or, you know, in our world we have now that is so diametrically opposed, we can't begin to understand how they began life. And truly, most people don't really even give it much thought. But that's where our stories began. And the people that we were with when we were little ones, they gave us our story. And that moves into the second layer of story, which is all of the people around us as we grew as children up until adolescence. Our stories were pretty much given to us. And what we want in the workshop is we want people to understand and think about that. Think about that for themselves and what was it like, and reconnect with that. That first language that we have is still with us. And it becomes sublimated when we learn the consensual language of humanity. But it's still with us. A lot of people call it our intuition, or they call it my gut feeling or my inner voice, or, you know, but it's still with us. And a lot of people these days were so covered up with information, they forget that. And they forget that they can trust it. So we want to reconnect with that. And the second layer, then we start early childhood. We start school, and we go on. And agency really doesn't begin until around adolescence. Adolescence is when we start to take independent action away from our family. And, you know, we all remember those moments that we have with other kids out in the out in the woods, or in the back lot behind the shopping center or something, where we were really starting to build our own stories. And then that goes on until we get to the third layer, which is where we have our responses and our reactions to the story that has been created to that point. And this is where people really start to get in and work on their lives and understanding who they are. And a lot of old frozen stories and trauma and experience are stored in our bodies. And so what, by understanding the first three layers, then we have a moment where if you're informed about the layers of story, you understand that you're going to work through those stories. Whether you attend a workshop or not, people are working through those stories. And a lot of people can't understand, why is my life the way that it is? Why do I keep doing the same things and expecting different results? And why do I have these kind of relationships that seem to wind up in the same place? And they're not giving thought to the story that has been built to that. But sooner or later, they usually do. And they find different resources to work through that. In our workshop, our people who attend break down their stories. They pick a story from their past and they break it into pieces. And who was the protagonist? Who's the story about? And what's at stake? And what was it like before the big moment of change? And what was the moment of change? And that exercise of taking a story and breaking it into pieces and put it in chunks objectifies the story. And suddenly the attendee is looking at an event from their past like a writer or a director, and they're moving the pieces around to try to make it into an 8 to 10 minute story that they're going to perform in front of other people. It has to be crisp. It has to be understandable. It has to be. So they're looking at their story for the first time, maybe objectively. And then the other thing they realize, you know, there's an interesting word that I really have been focused on these days. It's called quale, quale, or qualia. And a quale is a moment in time where there was a significant emotional response. And we all have these that no one else in the whole universe shares. My example of that was my father built always had a garden. When he cleaned up the garden in October, he always built a little campfire, and he would take the boys, me as the oldest son, and my two younger brothers. He'd build a little fire, and he showed us how to make a fire. And one October, I was about 8 years old, and he took Tim was 2 and Al was 6, and he took them into the house, and he said, "Do you want to stay out here?" And I said, "Yeah." And it was a windy October day, and there was a little fire, and I laid by that fire. And I had a feeling that overcame me of deja vu, that I have been here before and I have done this before. And I snuggled in close to the fire and I felt the cold wind. And that moment is what is called a quale. Now, everybody has these moments. And no matter, you know, like the three of us are sitting here and we're experiencing this, if you really ask us all to write down exactly what happened in this room right now, we would all write substantively different examples of that. So one of the things that people learn is through the storytelling workshop process is they learn that how they considered their story before, they have a choice now. And there's no one who's going to call them on that. Anyone else can't say what that story was about. And so there's a freedom that occurs. That's the magic moment. And then they work on their story, work on their story. You don't have to tell it on stage. Most people tell the story.
They do.
To the other people in the workshop, yes. At least. But I have had some people come to my... And I've done close to 30 workshops now, so I've done a lot.
It's kind of once you break through that initial thing of just saying it out loud, it just feeds then and it grows.
Right. And I would also say for people who have some concerns about stage fright, we go through breakouts. And the first breakout you do is you tell the basics of the story to one person at a time. You just break out with one person. So it's no different than sitting at the coffee shop down at Starbucks or something and
just having a conversation.
Having a conversation. That's the stair step up to performance art. So the magic happens, and we all have those quale that are so significant, but sometimes so trivial. you know, other people hear, oh, you lay by a fire in your dad's backyard, a big deal, you know, so what? But to me, in my life experience, that was a big moment. And it really connected me with something, you know, I think from our primordial past somehow.
And you were an 8-year-old in charge of the fire.
In charge of the fire. And I really wasn't in charge of the fire. I was grateful for the fire.
Right.
Because I felt the cold wind on my back. I had the smoke in my eyes, but I had the warmth from the fire.
You're listening to Roger Batten on Art on the Air, heard on WVLP and on Lakeshore Public Radio. So even if you're not hurting or need the therapy, you could this workshop would be good just to learn how to storytell.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't have to have deep, dark issue in your life. Just the structure of what you're talking about is how to take what you talk across in a coffee shop and put it before an audience.
Will we see you on Sunday?
I have to check my calendar. my problem is I can tell so many stories, and do I do an 8-minute? Which one do I tell?
Yeah, it's, and you know.
And I'm not shy anyway, so.
Yeah, we figured that out. Right? But it's, you know, someone that signed up for the workshop, I believe she's going to come. She sent me several messages and told me about her career path. And she said, I've been through therapy. I've been through all sorts of things in my life, and I feel very comfortable that I own my own story. I'm a performer. And she said, I don't need to come for healing. Why would I come? And we go through a big aspect that towards the end of the workshop about how to perform your story. And it gets at the technical techniques of presentation. And I think most practice storytellers get reconnected with the authenticity. And
right,
their
the humanity of
the
their
humanity.
Yeah, of their story. Yeah.
Right. And so later on, then they go rework stories that they may have told on stage many times, mm-hmm. but it has a deeper connection with the, you know, their past and the depth of.
It's because it's a very personal experience that happens in the workshop, and you can tell. Like, I mean, you can tell the people who are practiced and who are storytellers, but there is a different quality that then appears at the end or during the performance that you give, you know, the next week or 2 weeks after. So you're right.
So we've hit the fourth layer. Now take us to the fifth layer.
Right. The fifth layer is what I call your waking internal narrative. So every day we wake up. Every day we wake up and a story, a grand narrative of our life begins to play. And we pick up the thread of our story from where we were the day before and a week before and a month and a year before. And that is, that waking internal narrative is the only day, that day, today, is the only day we have agency. And the point to that is that we have memories. And if we give energy and time that we're thinking to our memories of our old stories, that is time and energy that we're not focused on the only day that we have any kind of agency to do anything about. And the same thing goes for the future. We have, a lot of us suffer from old stories that intrude on our day to day. And we also have a lot of apprehension and anxiety about the future. And we think, you know, we project out where is our story headed. And we worry about the future. And there's a therapy model called acceptance commitment therapy. And this, everything that we do at MyPath is the foundational philosophy behind it from a therapeutic point is ACT therapy, which says that the past is a thought, the future is a thought, we only have agency today. So your waking internal narrative is the fifth layer. And you free yourself by going through the fourth layer, you free the old stories, and you start to understand that you have today and today only to work on. And what we encourage people to do is write down five words of values that they have in life, just five words. And as you wake up in the morning, think of those five words. And then take your agency that day and move your life forward with those five words. And then at the end of the day, when you lay in your bed and you reflect on your day, think about, did my day line up? Was it in alignment with those five words? So the fifth layer of story is the day you live in, and understanding that you're creating your grand narrative of your life a day at a time. And you take ownership of that, and by understanding the five layers of story, and you move your life in the direction that you wish to.
Give us an example of one of your narratives. Just a story. One of your own stories.
My own stories. Well, you know, the Quale thing about laying by the fire, but one of my stories, every workshop I tell the same story, and I give an example. And this is a story that normally takes me 8 minutes to tell, and I don't think we have time for
that. Not quite 8 minutes, but you can give us the condensed version of that.
Yeah, I'll give you a version of that. You know, the story begins like this. I was sitting on my toilet when my neighbor's house blew up. I was wrapping my knee that I had injured in a baseball game the day before. I was 17 years old. And that summer, I was really having it with my dad. We were really going at it. And I was out of high school, and he told me it was time to grow up and be a man. And the explosion practically knocked me off the toilet. And I ran out in the front yard with an ace bandage hanging off my knee and stared at my neighbor's house, which was a diagonal catacorner to my parents' house. And the walls had blown away from the foundation. Kenny Cox ran out of the house across the street. He's my buddy. And he said, "What happened?" And I said, "I don't know." And we stood there looking at that house, and it was Myra Gunn's house, and she lived there with her little boy Johnny, who was 8. And the windows were blown out, and the door was blown out, but the curtains were just kind of fluttering from the inside out. And Don Cox, Kenny's dad, came out, and he stood there. Neighbors started coming out of their houses. It was a sunny afternoon in July. And we all stood there, and Don Cox lit up a cigarette, and he stood there with his Adam's apple bobbing up and down. And Nellie Zimmerman ran out of her house, and she said, "Don, what if Johnny's in there?" Well, Johnny was Myra's son. And he stayed there because she was a waitress at Maggie's Grill. And she would come home in the afternoons and cook dinner for him and go back out to Maggie's Grill. And Don just stood there smoking a cigarette, pondering the question, and the house blew up again. And the fire started shooting out of the windows and doors. It was dramatic. And a black cloud rose into the sky. And the police came and the firemen came. And they pushed the crowd back. And we were all, you know, Nellie Zimmerman was freaking out because her son David Zimmerman went to school with Johnny, and you know, the firemen tried to get up close to the house, but they couldn't get close. And all of a sudden, here came Myra's car. Myra's car pulled in, and she jumped out of the car and she ran right towards the door of the house. Now the flames were shooting out like 6 feet, and a fireman ran up behind her. And he grabbed her, and he dragged her back. And I remember her hair was smoking, and her dress, her blue dress with the white cotton apron, it was smoking. And she was screaming. It was horrible to hear. And David Zimmerman was running around yelling. He ran up to the fireman, and the fireman turned around and pushed him to the ground. And I said, "Come here, David." What? And he said, "Johnny's not in there." I said, "What?" He said, "Johnny's across at Jack Living's house across Baldwin Drive. He's over there." And I said, "Well, I was a big guy. I was 17. I ran up to the fireman. I said, "He's not in there." They would not listen to me. They wouldn't hear me. They were too busy with Nellie. It was with Myra. It was a huge. So I jumped in my GTO. I had a GTO.
Ooh.
Yeah. I jumped in my GTO with David Zimmerman, and we raced around Baldwin Drive, and we ran up to Jack Living's house. And, yep, there was Johnny Gunn sitting on the sofa reading a comic book. And I said, "You got to come with us." And he jumped in the car, and we raced back around. And by then, they were putting this house was completely consumed. The firemen were squirting water on it. That entire group of people, must have been more than 100, thought the little boy was in there and he was dead. And when I pulled up and got out of my car across the street at my dad's house, the crowd parted. They saw the boy. And they were trying to strap Myra to the gurney, and she saw her boy, and she leaped up, and she dove on him. She had him on the ground. And everybody was just so relieved, and I just burst into tears. Mm-hmm. It was just such a dramatic scene. And everybody started shaking my hand and congratulating me, and I was just completely emotionally shot. Later on that day, my dad got home and he shook my hand and he said, "I'm really proud of you, you know, and you really showed yourself to be a man today. You did the right thing." And when I think back on that whole thing and I think back on that story, you know, I thought the story was really about me and my dad and what we had going on and how proud I was that he thought I was a man. But the truth is, what I really learned from that whole experience for myself was how important it is to listen to children. They have a truth to tell us, and we're so busy and we think they're little kids and they might not know what they're talking about, but we really have something to learn from children.
That's a great story. And unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the show. So, Roger, you're going to be at the Nest Sunday, January 19th, 10 to 4 p.m., and that's going to be Level 4, and the Nest is in Michigan City. And we have information on our page.
We do.
And also, I have links to...
Yeah. And on the Nest Michigan City, there's or My Path Bibliotherapy, either of those Facebook pages or... Or Roger's website, My Path Bibliotherapy.
And we have a link on our main page. If you see Roger's picture or thing, you can click on that and I'll take you to there,
learn
too.
Learn more about it. Go to the website.
So, well, we'd like to thank you today for being here, Roger. It was very, very good. We could have gone on for a lot longer.
I know.
But that's always the case here with Art in the Air. By the way, Art in the Air is heard every Friday here at 11 a.m. We're rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. And then we're also heard Sunday at 7 p.m. Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1. Your hosts are Larry Reckner, Esther Golden. We always like to thank Greg Kovach for helping us out as WVLP's station manager. You can also hear us streaming on both of those sites. You can hear the entire archive of our show at breck.com/AOTA. Art in the Air is supported by the Brouwer Museum and Walt Breininger Paragon Investments, and we're also underwritten by the Indiana Arts Commission and National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest, send us your information about arts-related event at artontheair@wvlp.com. Next week, we have the people from Lakeshore Concerts, previously the Munster Concerts Association, previously the Hammond Community Concerts. I've worked with these folks for about 12, 13, 14, probably 15 years when I moved them over from Hammond to Munster when I was at the theater there. So anyway, next week, they'll be on as our guests. So we'll see you right here next week, 103.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a terrific week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.